Hello, friends, and welcome to Hello, Friend. My name is Bethany Rutter, and today's friend is Will Dean. This is episode 10, the final episode of the first season of Hello, Friend, and I thought Will would be the perfect last guest before I take a long break. He's an author, and I love talking to authors, but I particularly wanted to talk to Will for three reasons. One, he wrote the kind of book I love to read, a crime novel. Two, a year ago, neither of us had an agent or a book deal, and now we both do. Three, he lives in a forest in the middle of nowhere in Sweden. But more on that later. First of all, how do we know each other?
Well, we met on Twitter.com.
Yeah, we did.
I think about 3 years ago. It was when I was doing parental leave for my little boy. And I was hiking through the woods. I remember the exact day.
Oh my God, that's so cool. Yeah, tell me more.
Interacted with you. I had him like on some kind of rucksack on me. And in Sweden, parental leave's normally split 50-50. So I think my wife had just done 8 months and I just starting my 8 months. So I had him on my back. It was November. And you tweeted like a photo with an amazing hat with a veil.
That really does sound like something I would do.
You did. And I tweeted, Nick, really nice hat. I like your hat. And you were like, thank you very much. And that was the beginning of everything. And honestly, Twitter before, I loved Twitter before. But from that moment onwards, Twitter kind of came alive for me.
Because I have so many cool lady friends.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, Twitter was great, black and white until then. And then suddenly it became Technicolor.
Like the Wizard of Oz before the internet.
Exactly.
Will you tell me about your book? Please.
Okay, my book is called Dark Pines, and it's kind of a cross between Twin Peaks and Broadchurch.
Cool.
So it's like a quirky crime story set in an isolated, small, claustrophobic town in the center of Sweden during 2 weeks in autumn. And at the beginning, it's the start of the elk hunting season, and a body is found deep in the woods.
Cool.
Basically, and my heroine, Tuva Moodysson, is a deaf journalist working in a small newspaper in this small town, and she's very ambitious, very focused, and very confused all at the same time. And she kind of goes out to try and investigate this crime.
Cool. And when did you write it? Tell me this. This is okay. I thought it would be more interesting to talk to you as an author who is like in the middle of the like long road to publication, that process,
yes,
than talking to someone that is really distant from the first time they ever had to go through it and can't really remember all of the, like, you know, the process, the conflicting emotions, all of that kind of stuff. So talk me through the timeline of like you writing, like you thinking about writing it, doing all of that stuff, and then to the present day.
Okay, so I wrote the first draft like 6 months after our first Twitter interaction that, okay, I just talked about. So it's kind of May 2015, I,
yeah,
think it is. And I was putting it off. I had this book in my head. It was kind of playing on the inside of my eyelids every night, the whole thing. So I really wanted to write it, but I was just finishing my parental leave. And then my parental leave got extended because Alfie, my little boy, wasn't quite ready for nursery. So then I thought, okay, I'm just going to have to write it in his naps. So I wrote it in, this sounds kind of weird, but I wrote it in 4 weeks in his naps. So I wrote one chapter in the morning in his 2.5 hour nap and one chapter in the afternoon in his 2.5 hour nap.
It's a good job Alfie loves naps.
I should dedicate the book to him, honestly, and
and his
sleeping
skills.
Yeah, because he doesn't sleep like that anymore. So I was very lucky back then. And so, yeah, the book came out of his naps. And actually, I've written two books since then, like first drafts. And I copy the same routine, even though he's no longer napping at home. So I still do like a morning chapter in his nap time and an afternoon chapter in his nap time.
That's a very nice way to like structure your,
yeah,
writing.
It works. So that's the way the first draft came about. And then because I write it so fast, it's a rough monster. So I have to, you know, wrestle with it and fight with it and polish it. And so I did that the summer of that year. And then I started submitting to agents. I think it was August, July, August or something like that. So it was quite a fast process.
Of 2015.
I think so, yeah.
And, yeah, then what happened?
And then I sent it off to 2015. Maybe it was 2016.
Yeah, I was going to say, 2016. This was all last year, right?
All my years are wrong.
Yeah.
It was 2016, and I sent it off to 20 agents, I think it was, which is more than people recommend, but I just wanted to get it out there at that point. I sent it.
Why do people recommend fewer? And, like, how will the agents know that you sent it to, like, fewer or more other people?
They don't really know, but I think it's just easier to manage the process if you send it to five and then you wait and then you send it to another five.
Oh, yeah, I guess, yeah.
That's often what they say, yeah. But I just was like, I'm going to send it to 20, my 20 top. And I got 10 who requested the full manuscript, which was I was really happy about. And then I had 3 offer representation and 2 more who kind of were going to, but then they ran out of time. So that was how that came about. And then I had this extremely weird, intense day where I was feeding Alfie. My wife was away for a week and I was emailing all the agents saying, I want to come and meet you. And they were saying, you know, come chat with us, have a drink. And a woman turned up at my door. And I should say at this point that I live in the middle of a huge forest in Sweden with no neighbors whatsoever. And I'd never get anybody turning up at the front door and just knock, knock, knock. So I was like, what the hell is this? I was feeding him. I was emailing. I was booking flights. I opened the door and a woman was there and she was dehydrated. She was in a really bad way. She had 2 huge bags of mushrooms, wild mushrooms. I was like, what is this? Is a plot twist.
Yeah, this sounds like a lie.
I know. And I said, are you okay? Can I give you a glass of water? And she said, I'm lost. You know, I can't get back to my truck. And I said, well, I can give you directions so you can get back. And she was like, no, I'm not going back out there.
I will never go.
Can you please take me back? So I was like, okay. So I said to all these agents, hold on an hour, put my son in my truck. And I drove. It took like 2 hours to get to her truck and back. But she was so grateful. And she's a professional mushroom consultant, which is a pretty cool job. So she gave me her card and she was like, I talk to restaurants and I can identify mushrooms and I do lectures. So if in future you need a mushroom fact for a book, just email me.
So the third book is called Dark Mushrooms.
Yeah. It's a mushroom thriller. Yeah.
So that was the day that you had to like... The Mushroom Lady Day was...
Mushroom Lady Day was like, yeah, like 3 days before I actually flew in, met with these agents, which was extremely stressful and so difficult because they were all great and it was really difficult to pick between them and ask the right questions.
Yeah.
Because I knew this might be a relationship I have for 30 or 40 years. So I wanted to make the right choice. So it was really stressful. But I actually went with the agent who first offered me representation and she's fantastic and super... passionate and lovely and kind and wonderful. So,
and it's one of those things where, like, before you've done it, you don't know what the right questions are. You don't know what's important until you're like quite far into the process. And
so true.
Yeah,
exactly. So,
and, if you're doing it now, you might know stuff to ask, but
maybe.
At the time, you're like,
I had to ask other agents, like, what should I ask?
Yeah.
Sorry, other authors, and that was really helpful.
Yeah, do you know what? I really think that, like, a supportive community goes a long way. Like,
it really does.
Having people to ask about stuff. Like,
I was so grateful because they just said, most of them said, go with your gut instinct.
Who do you like the most?
Yeah.
Like, that's who you're going to be hanging out with at different things.
Exactly.
Like, that's quite important.
Yeah. Who do you want to sit next to on a plane for 8 hours? And so.
And that's your lady.
That's my lady.
Is she
called
Kate?
She's called Kate Burke.
Yeah.
She's great.
At Diane Banks.
Yeah.
Cool. And you like would recommend being represented by them to anyone listening?
I would, yeah.
Good.
She's superb, yeah.
And then, so she got your manuscript and she was like, yes, this is some good shit. Then what happened?
She did. And then she wanted to get it ready for Frankfurt Book Fair to pitch it there. So, and she was an editor for 10 years at like 3 different big publishing houses. So the work she did, the editorial work she did was amazing. Like, I'd never been through a process like that. And it kind of tore my heart out when I read her comments because it looked like so much work and so much kind of deconstruction and then rebuilding. But actually it wasn't. And all her comments were great. So it only took me like a week and a half. I just raced through it all. And then I sent it back to her and we had like one more back and forth. And then she put it out on submission, I think, a week or 10 days before Frankfurt, and then it sold at Frankfurt.
When's Frankfurt?
It's in October, I think.
Okay, cool.
Mid-October, yeah.
So it was like late August that you'd like decided to go with.
Exactly,
her.
Yeah.
I remember I was on holiday in Budapest.
Okay, wow.
And I remember being very happy for you.
Thank you.
So that was like a pretty quick turnaround, and then...
That was pretty quick, yeah.
And then in October it was like... Cool, it's gone to Frankfurt and now it's going to be published.
Yeah, which is wild. Like I thought it might take me 5 books or something, and this was my second book. I have another book that is locked in a drawer that will never see the light of day.
But your
which
wife
is
thinks
shit.
It's good, so
but she's my wife, so she's very nice, but it's not good. It's better than it used to be, but
okay.
it will never be seen, I don't think. So
Maybe it'll be seen.
Maybe. Maybe I'll work on it as a script one day.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It can be like your weird little extra thing.
But honestly, I can't even look at it right now. It's too ugly.
It's just too embarrassing.
Yeah, it's just too bad.
Okay.
So,
okay.
I'm glad it's locked away.
And I'm glad that, like, you're not so arrogant to think that it's good. I don't know. I think it's sometimes good when people are like, I did this thing and I know it's good, but I've done this thing, which I know is not so good. It's not like everything I do is perfect and I'm a genius.
Yeah, and that's why I think when I wrote the first draft of my second book, which is my book, I was so happy. I was so relieved that it kind of came out naturally and I could see that it was better.
Yeah.
And I think of my first book that's locked away as kind of my creative writing course for free, because I worked on it so much. I kind of stripped it back from 95,000 words down to 30, back up again, back down again, back up again, like a lot of hours of work. And it was never going to be a good book.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot from that process, like what to avoid in the second book.
It was like shit you had to do.
Honestly, Bethany, it was a nightmare book, because it's got like 7 points of view. It's written over a period of 2 years in 7 different countries. I mean, you can hear it's a mess. Whereas when I sat down for my second one, which is my first one, I kind of realized, okay, this is going to be one person's point of view during 2 weeks in one town.
Yeah, keep it small.
Exactly, as simple as can be.
Yeah.
So no tangling, just like let the writing speak for itself. So.
Yeah, and I feel like that's maybe something that has been slightly lost in a lot of like thriller-ish writing is like, there's almost like a formula where it has to have like multiple timelines and like different perspectives and stuff like that. So like, I actually really find it a relief when I read something that's quite contained. So I'm looking forward to reading it.
I know what you mean. And some of them get tangled.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just like, as a writer, I like the simplicity of it. It was quite liberating. So I could just focus on the story and the people.
Yeah, like the real shit, rather than having to start again with each new perspective. I don't know.
Exactly, and I was lucky. I didn't have to have like a huge kind of post-it note wall chart thing. It was quite simple.
And would you say it's a thriller? Or is it... I don't know. I'm always like confused about genres. Like,
me too. I really am. Because when I sent it to Kate, I didn't know what it was. I was like, what is this? And I said, asked that to all of those agents. What is this? And they all came up with like, it's kind of crime. But it's difficult to know. So I think it's literary crime is what people are kind of calling it. Okay. It's kind of crime. It's crime, thriller, crime.
What is it closest to in terms of things that you know I have read?
Okay. I think it's a little bit...
Don't worry, I won't think that, like, you are saying that your book is as good
Thank
as
you.
Whatever.
It's not, but it's a little bit Gillian Flynn's Sharp Objects.
Okay, cool.
Meets Stephen King's Needful Things, which I don't think you've read, but
read.
It's that's the small town element.
Okay, cool. So, I understand what it is now.
Yeah.
It's not like that I really need to know, because I am going to read it this week, but...
Thank you.
Are there things that you wish you had known about, like, the world of publishing, or, like, what was going to happen to you before you embarked upon it?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I think the thing that I've kind of seen is that it's just really important to be a good person, just like in life itself, like to be kind and generous and understanding and patient with people, with other people. Patience actually maybe is a thing because, as you know, congratulations on your announcement, by the
way.
Thank you. It's amazing. Things take a long time. So I guess that I've learned, which I didn't quite realize.
Yeah.
And also the how collaborative the whole process is, like how many people are involved. Like I guess I didn't quite realize how important my cover designer would be, because he's done a really good job, I think, and how important every little piece of the puzzle is. So it's really a team project.
Obviously, I will edit this out if you don't want to talk about it. But do you want to talk about the fact that your title completely changed and things like that?
I'm happy to talk about
that.
Okay, cool.
I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, so it changed 3 times, actually.
And obviously, the title changing influenced the cover design, which has now become something important and nice for you.
Yes, that's true. So my title that I came up with is the worst title ever conceived. It's
Tell
so
me.
Bad. I'm almost embarrassed to say it.
I don't want
it's
to embarrass
so
you on air.
No, I'm going to say it. I think it's important to get it out there. So my title was Manhunt.
What's wrong with that?
Well,
it's kind of like the Silence of the Lambs, yeah, it's the Thomas Harris thing, right?
I know. Well, it's kind of what the book is, but when I talked to agents, they were like, well, this is like some 1987 thriller in an airport with like a gun on the cover with blood dripping down.
Yeah, is it like a Dean Koontz novel?
Yeah. It's the wrong title.
Okay.
And so
I don't think that's so bad. Like, don't beat yourself up about
that. Okay, I'm glad you say that.
I mean, it's not the best title, but it's not like the worst one.
Okay. But the second one that I came up with was Sweet Rot.
Yeah, which I really like.
Thank you.
And I know that my good friend and Hello Friend guest, Alice Slater of Smoking Tofu, also thinks that's a good title.
Alice is amazing. And the fact that she loves it and you love it means it's kind of difficult to give up, but my publishers were great and were like, you can keep it, but maybe it's a little bit too much for a debut and you can maybe use it in a later book, which is fine with me. So they were like, you do you want to use that or do you want to come up with some alternatives? So I came up with Dark Pines, which now I love.
Yeah,
so thank goodness for that, because to give up Sweet Rot was difficult, but now I'm really happy I did, because I can use it in the future and because I really like Dark Pines.
And Dark Pines has given the opportunity for a good cover design as well.
Thank you.
Which I really like. And obviously, because this is audio, you can't see it, but it's a very cool cover. It's like either black and white or like kind of grey.
Yeah.
It's black and white.
Yeah.
And it is a white road going through a thick forest, and a car is parked at the side of the road, and there's a trail of blood going into the forest. And it just says Dark Pines on the cover, and it just looks really good, and it's very cohesive, and I really understand like what it is, where it's set, what it's about. And
fantastic.
I think they've done a good job of the cover and the title together.
Yeah.
So congrats.
Thank you very much indeed. I really like it.
And it's almost really like you getting what you needed rather than what you wanted.
That's true. Exactly. Yeah.
And I think something that I'm being forced to learn is like there is a reason that the people that you're dealing with do those jobs, like they are the experts, and if they're saying to you like, we think this is a better idea, it probably is. Like, no one's out to make your life difficult for no reason.
Exactly, that was my kind of thinking process, like, who am I?
Yeah, this, what the fuck do I know,
this weird dude from the woods? Who am I to say, actually, I think you're wrong?
Yeah.
Like, I've never done this before, so I kind of put my ego away and just said, actually, I'm gonna go with your advice.
Yeah, as annoying as it is.
Yeah So
yeah, because there's this illustrator that I really want for the cover of my novel. And my editor also really wants that same illustrator, but is concerned that it is too cool.
Okay.
So,
too cool?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it would somehow be like, I don't know. But so I'm coming up with a list of, like, other potential illustrators.
Okay,
and,
that's good.
Yeah. But it feels like we're on the same page about the stuff that we want, and that's nice. So
yeah, that's good. Your book is going to be so good.
Maybe
it really no, it is. It is. It really is.
I'm kind of looking forward to it, but it's a long way off. So.
Yeah. It is. It's a marathon,
not a sprint.
It really is.
Whereas I've been sprinting this whole process. I have just been like, anything that I can control, I get done very quickly, and that's like anything to do with like my book or like doing this podcast or like anything that is only up to me, I will just like do. So I'll write the book really quickly, and then as soon as it becomes someone else's responsibility to deal with, like, I find that very difficult.
Yes. I was so impressed with how fast you went through. At the beginning, you were like, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to write a book, and then you just wrote the book, and then you just got an agent.
And I feel like I did get an agent, but there are also agents that react to me. Like, I feel like I don't want people to think that everything was just, like, really easy.
Because, sure.
Yeah, people didn't want to represent me. Like, people read the book and were like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
Or, like, you're clearly very talented, but, like, I don't think that this is the right thing for me to do. I did get through that whole thing, like, quite quickly.
Now
I'm paying for it by having to wait a really long time for my book to actually come out.
Yeah.
But I guess it gives me time to make it good and then maybe write another one.
That's the thing. I think that's probably the best therapy you can have, is just getting involved in another one and going into that new world.
Yeah.
I found that very therapeutic.
And so you are focusing now on the other books around this one rather than anything completely different. Is that right?
Exactly. So I'm focused on the second Tuve Moodysson book, which is called Red Snow.
Yeah, that's so good.
Thank you. That was a title they're happy with and I'm happy with. So that was really nice and simple. And so I'm wrestling with that now. And it's, I was saying to you earlier, it's kind of a sprawling beast of a thing. And I'm having to work a lot harder on it to get it into shape, into the shape that I want it in. So it will be fine, but I need to throw like a lot of hours this autumn at it, and then it will be fine. But I'm at a point where it's kind of, I'm kind of spinning plates, and I need to get working really hard on it.
And then there's another one?
Then there'll be a third one and a fourth one and a fifth one, I think, I hope.
Whoa, that's so many.
Just because I love writing Tuve. Like, before this book, writing was writing, but when I started writing the first page of my first Tuve Moodysson book, Dark Pines, it was like a huge relief. It was like I was high, I was buzzing, it was like being possessed, you know? And that's why the book came out so fast, I think. It was so much fun to write her. It was so liberating. I love writing Tuve, so I don't really want to stop.
Yeah.
If possible.
And like, it's not like it's unheard of for there to be loads of books that revolve around the same person. Like,
that's true. Yeah, it has been done.
It has literally been done lots of times.
Yes.
That's so cool. I'm very happy that you have a plan.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope it works out.
Yeah. And you have just been having fun this weekend.
I've been in Harrogate at like this huge crime writing festival.
It felt like everyone I knew from the world of books was there.
A lot of people there. Yeah. It was lovely. It was like finding your people. It was just a big tent full of writers and readers and passionate book people drinking and playing croquet and having fun. And it was really nice. It was really good fun. A little bit intense.
Like,
I need
like,
my hermit time now. I need to go back to the woods.
You need to go back to the
swamp. Lock myself away. Yeah. But it was great. It was really fun.
And did you... You went as like a kind of future potential person, right?
Exactly.
Like,
I went
You were there in your capacity as like Will Dean, author, rather than like Will Dean, random man on the internet.
I was kind of in the capacity of Will Dean, unknown author, which was quite nice. I was very low key. I was kind of just mooching around in the corners, just kind of saying hi to writers that I've read and that I respect and really, really like and wanted to say hi to, and just kind of checking the place out for next year when the book will be out. So,
and you'll be a real, real dude.
Exactly. It's kind of a nerdy thing. Like when I used to go to job interviews, I always used to turn up at the office the day before so I could completely, do the journey on the tube and like walk up to the door of the office and then go back home again.
That's kind of weird, and it's
very weird.
It.
And my wife used to kind of laugh at it, but it meant that I was more relaxed the day of the interview because I knew my route, I knew which tube exit, and everything else.
So. And you knew like what it would look like and what it would be like.
Exactly what it would smell like, what it would feel like, and that was the same as going to Harrogate this year. Just so I'm kind of relaxed next year.
A practice run at being a real author.
Yeah, that's it.
So when is your book out?
It's out January the 4th.
That's so like that's about as early in 2018 as a book can come
out.
It is.
It's
that's
like Christmas
so
and then bang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will pay money for one. No, I'll pre-order it because that's good, right?
Thank you very much.
I've heard on the grapevine that like pre-ordering shit is really good. Like it makes authors look good.
I think so. Yeah. Pre-ordering is good.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I'll like single-handedly enable the pre-ordering campaign.
I'll do the same for you, and then at least we have like one each.
Yeah,
so.
One book was pre-ordered by both of us.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know, something we were talking about on the way here. We took the boat here.
We did.
And we had to wait quite a long time for the boat to come, but...
We did a cruise.
Yeah, we cruised up the Thames. And we were kind of talking about how, I don't know, maybe more for me that like, because I didn't really talk about the book that I wrote until I was able to announce that it was being published for like weird superstitious reasons. And also then once I did get a publishing contract, I was told not to talk about it until it was being officially announced yesterday. That meant that I actually never really talked much about writing on Twitter. Like, I didn't really, I was never really explicit about like what I was writing or like that I was writing fiction. And I think maybe I quite like that I have not got into the habit of like moaning about writing on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I also think that like for a long time, I did not feel like a real writer because it felt so much like being a real writer meant like complaining about writing and what terrible agony it is. And, and I'm like, mate, if you're inside and sitting down, especially if you're inside sitting down behind a laptop, like, what are you complaining about? But I don't know. True. Yeah.
And for me, I feel like there's maybe enough kind of straight white guys, writers, giving tips and giving this and that and the other and just talking on Twitter about writing, whereas I kind of feel like I could just shut up and listen.
Yeah.
And I don't feel quite entitled enough to talk about it yet because I'm so early in the process.
Yeah.
So maybe in 10 years, if somebody's like, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that characterization? I'll talk. But right now, I'm just thinking, like, let other people talk. And, like, let Sarah Waters talk.
Yeah,
or Hilary Mantel talk.
Yeah,
exactly.
But, like, I, instead of, like, complaining on Twitter about, like, I don't know, I tend to just, like, email you and be like,
I love your emails.
Okay, good. Because I'm like, is it just, like, dumb questions about writing? Or, like, dumb questions about, like, the publishing process where I'm like, he doesn't know. Like, you can't just ask him anything just because, like, he's, like, a year ahead of you. He won't know. But it does make me feel better when I'm like, oh, I've got my edits and I don't want to open the document because they might be bad. And you're like, that's normal. That's okay.
It's totally healthy. Yeah. Honestly, when I get an email from you in the woods, I'm just delighted because I normally get emails and it's like, it's going to entail some work.
Yeah.
Or some kind of boring admin tax thing. Yeah. But when I get an email from you with poodles in the subject line, and pine trees and a guy with a mustache or whatever, I'm just like, yeah, it's gonna be, this is gonna be fun, this is gonna be interesting.
Even so, if she's asking like a silly question about editing, good. But yeah, like that's where I'm at now, is like my editor sent through like the first edits on my book last week, and I was kind of like, oh, this is a whole thing that I hadn't really thought about, like having to come back to this and doing more work on it. Like, I just hadn't thought about it because I'm a silly baby.
Have you opened the email?
I have opened the document because I had lunch with her last Friday and I was like, I can't really go for lunch with her without having read it because she'll know that I haven't.
It's too, weird if you don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, like you saying that it's normal to feel daunted by that task made me feel better.
How do you feel now you've opened it?
Oh, I don't know. Like, she's right. Like, everything she's telling me to do is right.
Yeah.
But I'm also like, don't want to do any work because I'm a lazy bitch.
It's hard though, isn't it? Like, a thing that you've finished in a way and then to have to go back in. And if you change something on page 27, it's going to have knock-on effects, ripples all the way through the book. Yeah, it is tough.
And like, there's another thing that I started writing a couple of months ago, and I only wrote like 10,000 words of it. And she was basically, my editor was basically like, edit this book first and then do that.
Yes.
Like, do it in that order. And I was like, but doing new stuff is fun. Doing old stuff is boring.
I would kind of say if you want to do something new, do it. I don't want to...
Rachel, if you're listening.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But I kind of think if there's something that you want to, that's bursting out of you that you want to write, just write it.
Yeah, maybe I will. Maybe I can do both.
Maybe. I mean, you have to, it's up to you. You know how much you can juggle. But for me, if I need to write something, I'm just going to write it.
Yeah.
And deal with it afterwards.
Maybe, no, I think it made me feel better if I did the stuff I didn't want to do first.
Okay, like, no, that's better. You should do that, totally. Yeah.
But yeah, I hope that with, now that like it is a known fact that I wrote this book and like it's coming out and blah, 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 like, I don't want to become one of those people that whines about writing on Twitter, so I'll just decide not to.
Just email me.
Yeah, I'll just email you instead.
That'd be a delightful thing,
Yeah, I don't know. Like, and I think for a long time that made me, not doing that kind of like performative writing thing, made me feel like I was not a real writer.
Okay.
That because I had done it in quite a like speedy business-like fashion, it was like not real.
Yes.
And it's only now that I'm like, no, it's real. I did it. I wrote
so
a book,
real
so it's real.
It's very real.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a writer, Bethany.
Yeah, I guess.
You really are. But it is a difficult thing to say because it sounds pretentious.
Yeah.
It's like today, last weekend, I said to somebody, like in a sentence, my publicist, and then I kind of stopped myself and I was like, you sound like such a wanker. You can't say that. You know, it's like,
don't, but you do don't have talk. A publicist.
I know, but you can't talk about it.
Yeah.
It just seems ridiculous. It seems so weird.
Yeah.
So I know exactly what you mean.
But we're real people.
We're getting there.
You're way more of like a real person because you
No, absolutely not.
Don't you just like live in a swamp so that you can write more? Isn't that like...
Yeah, but what, yeah. What's real about that?
Do you find that like it has made you more productive living in a swamp?
It has, but I think you can be very unproductive in a swamp as well.
What's there to do apart from... Oh, I guess you
find
have,
things to do.
You do have a small child.
I do. So a massive cat.
Yeah.
They keep me busy.
Yeah. But so you could just hang out with them rather than write.
I think it was not so much writing time, it's reading time that I have more of now, which is so precious. Like in London, when I was working in London full time, I was able to read maybe a book every 2 weeks or a little more than that. And then when I moved to the swamp and I was watching TV still, I could read a book a week. And then I quit TV completely and radio for a while at least. And then I could read like 2 or 3 books a week. And that helped my writing so much.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Why?
I just needed that intense period of reading good shit, like lots and lots and lots of good books in 1 year. And that gave me a little bit of a surge in, okay, I can do this, I can break this rule, I can,
yeah,
you know, I can write this length of thing.
Yeah, I really think that's true, in that reading lots of different good things has made me feel like more confident about my own writing. Like I don't have to, there isn't like one right way of doing stuff, or like you are allowed to write something quite quiet and low key.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be very high concept, yeah, or like, I don't know. I just remember at some point during the writing of my book, No Big Deal, I read a book that is so completely not like my book that it was, you know, polar opposites. And it was a book by Helen Dunmore, RIP, about spies.
Okay.
And I can't remember what it was called, and I feel really bad about it because she's dead and therefore I have to like honor her more.
Yes.
But it was like her most recent book before she died, and it was just so like low key but amazing, and I was like, this is a really quiet book and I like that, and it made me feel really like good about writing. And I don't know.
That's lovely to hear.
Yeah.
And I think often it's that's exactly how it goes. It's like a weird book that's not in the genre that you're writing in, that's maybe old.
Yeah.
And it just has a thing that clicks with you and you're like, okay, I could do that, or I could not do that, or yeah, totally. And like I read now 3 or 4 contemporary crime literary kind of books, and then I'll go back and I'll read an old romance book, or I'll read an old historical fiction book or something like that. And I often find that it's that book that's not in my genre or not in my period that really helps me and that gives me something.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, this is not like you stating forever your favorite people in the whole world. And if you don't mention someone,
okay,
that means that you hate them.
Yeah.
But like, who do you like reading the most in your genre?
In kind of older style books?
Any.
Like, I love Cormac McCarthy. He's like my favorite, probably.
He's your
writer.
Boy.
He is. I love the way he mixes nature writing with things happening. I love how concise he is. I just love the way he describes life. And then I love Muriel Spark, Sarah Waters, Shirley Jackson, Susan Hill. I like creepy stuff.
Yeah.
My genre is creepiness.
Okay.
It's like if you can write a story that makes me feel uncomfortable, unnerved, unsettled, I'm going to read all your books.
That's what I want to read. That's definitely like... I don't want to write it, but I want to read it.
Yeah.
So.
I don't care about police procedurals too much. I don't want too much gore. I just want to be... I want something that's tense.
Yeah.
All the way through.
You want to be scared.
I do, in a kind of low-key way. And I want a voice, which means that I'm fascinated by the pages where nothing much is happening.
Yeah.
And pull me through.
That's very, like, Sharp Objects, I thought. Gillian Flynn, Sharp
She's
Objects.
She's so good. I really want another book by Gillian Flynn soon.
Yeah. Well, I feel like... to mention her again, Alice, posted a picture of something recently.
Okay.
That was like Gillian Flynn related, but maybe it wasn't, I don't know.
The only photo I've seen her post recently was F. Scott Fitzgerald's hair. Which was a fantastic tweet.
And then you abused her for being frivolous about men's appearances. No, obviously that wasn't you.
Okay.
But like,
okay, wow. So it's like,
no, some dudes did. Yeah.
Really? Oh my God.
About like... yeah, having a go at the way he looked rather than, like, appreciating all of his writing.
What a thing to say. My God.
It's like no one's allowed to have fun. Like, at the expense of F. Scott Fitzgerald's hair.
It's crazy hair.
But yeah, I'll look into it and report back about what that book might be.
Okay.
Yeah, like, I think I like Gillian Flynn's books because it's just like something horrible is happening.
Yeah.
Like something weird and unnerving and horrible is happening.
Yeah.
And I like that.
And I love her, the voice. Like, her voice is very her own.
Yeah.
And it pulls me through the whole book. I'm just delighted to read her stuff.
Yeah.
And her little mini twists. I mean, obviously, she's had a massive, you know, landmark twist in Gone Girl. But in her other book, she has mini twists and little, just little things, little bends rather than twists. And I really enjoy that because I find most twists extremely unsatisfying and annoying.
And now I want to be like, tell me about twists you did like. And then it's like, no one's going to read those books after
exactly.
We
I will never talk about twists ever.
Yeah.
And also, when I'm about to read a book, I don't want to be told there's a twist in it.
Oh, my God. Me either. And I get so furious. I basically don't want to know anything about a book other than it is good.
Yeah.
I want someone that I trust to recommend a book, and then I will read it.
Exactly.
Unless it's like sci-fi or fantasy, when I will not read it.
Yeah. Don't tell me there's a twist at the end.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Or even halfway through.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. And I feel like this is related to my rant about trailers in the previous episode of this podcast where I was like, I don't want to see The Beguiled anymore because I know what happens.
Okay.
And yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just furious about it all the time.
Yeah.
Does your book have a twist? Wait, no, don't tell me.
My lips are so sealed.
Any other people that you want to like big
Yeah, up? In terms of writers now that I love, it's difficult to remember everyone like right now on the spot, but I love Kit DeWall. Have you read her book, My Name is Leon?
I haven't, but she was so also good. Speaking, you know, the thing where I did my dry breakfast?
Yeah.
She was on at that event as
okay.
well. And she was great. And she read a really great piece that she'd written.
She's so cool.
Yeah.
And I love that book. It made me very sad and very, it really moved me. She's very, very good at what she does. And then I love Jessie Burton, The Muse, beautiful writing. I love Imran Mahmoud, wrote a book called You Don't Know Me, which is really interesting. The voice is really original. It's the main character is in a dock in a courtroom, and it's him kind of giving his testimony and saying what happened. That's the whole book.
This sounds cool.
And he does it so well.
This sounds like something I would read.
It's really, really nice.
Is it like crimey, right? Kind of crimey?
Totally crimey.
Okay.
Totally
I've never crimey. Heard of it.
It's really, really good. It came out, I think, just a few months ago.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I'm going to look into this.
Very original.
Thank you. This is what I want.
Very, very good.
Don't tell me if there's a twist.
I won't tell you.
Okay, that's really good because, like, I feel like people hardly ever mention something that sounds good that I don't already know about.
Yeah.
And you just did it.
It's a good book.
Yeah.
And then there's Abhir Mukherjee, who wrote A Rising Man, which is set in India in the 20s. And I don't read a huge amount of historical fiction, but I really enjoy this.
Yeah.
And kind of by osmosis, not knowing I learned a load of stuff about Indian history in that book. But it's also very exciting and very, very exquisitely written.
Cool.
I enjoyed it.
Very solid recommendations and like non-obvious. So that was good.
Good.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
What are you looking forward to the most in your new life as an author?
Honestly, the thing I like best is being alone, reading and writing. So being able to do that as much as possible is just the biggest luxury.
Someone's paying you to do that.
Yeah,
it's literally
exactly.
Your job.
I would kind of do it for, you know, for no money. So doing it and people reading it and liking it and being able to do it for a living is crazy. It's a dream.
People liking it. So your proofs are slowly like making their way around.
Yeah,
the
I think
world.
There's like 10 out there at the moment, and there's a load of new ones coming out soonish, I think. So yeah, it's
so people have been reading it.
Yes.
How do you feel emotionally about people reading it?
Absolutely terrified, genuinely scared, because they're not people. They're not people I don't know. They're people that I respect and who I really enjoyed their work. So if I send it to somebody and I never hear anything, or, you know, it's just kind of heartbreaking.
Has that happened?
No.
Okay,
no,
good.
No, not at all.
I was like, I will beat them up.
Not at all. Not at all. Everybody's been, I mean, only, I think, one or two people have read it, but they've been super positive. And that's been like a huge relief and so nice. And yeah, so it's been good.
Good.
Yeah.
And then one day there'll be like reviews of it. Will you read them?
I think all writers do at the beginning, and I'll probably be exactly the same. Like, the first reviews I'll read, and then I'll go through a process of realizing this is not good for my health.
Yeah.
And actually, I should stop. So I'll probably fall into that You know, I probably should never read a review, but how are you going to do that? Like, how are you going to be that disciplined?
I think maybe I just won't. Maybe I never will. I think I'm...
Really?
Yeah, because I don't think you're going to learn anything from them.
I just think it's difficult not to be tempted.
Yeah, because it's you want to read something good.
It's like a dark kind of thing luring you in. So I think I'll read a few, but I definitely don't want to read them going forwards. Especially not if I'm like writing the next project or the project after that.
Yeah, because like...
I can't be dealing with that.
No, and you... What you're writing, like, whatever you read in a review, like, you're not going to learn anything from that that should influence what you write next. Like, that should be something that you figure out with, like, your editor and your agent, not some random person on the internet or, like, in a magazine.
That's very true.
In my opinion.
No, you are right. So, I will try and...
I just wouldn't, you know?
Yeah, I'll try and stay away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not.
I'll probably fail, but I'll try and stay away.
Yeah.
Especially the kind of Amazon reviews where they, you know, they talk about it being two days late and the packaging was
yeah, like you don't give a
inadequate.
Shit about that.
Like, no, don't give me 2 stars because
yeah.
of that. So
yeah.
I'll ignore those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't blame Royal Mail's failure on me.
Yeah.
And are there things that you're like not looking forward to?
No.
You're just like,
I love it. Like,
process.
I'm so lucky to be able to do this. And like you say, people pay you for it. It's just the biggest privilege in the world. So. No, I just want to have fun with it, you know, and see what happens. And I want to just try and get the balance right, maybe between my hermit time
yep.
in the forest, which I need, not just to be able to write, but also just to be able to kind of be healthy and happy, and my time traveling and going to conferences and festivals and all of that stuff, which I love, but in kind of small doses.
Yeah.
So I just need to get that balance right.
At least when you're like hermiting, you get to hang out with Alfie.
I do a lot.
Yeah.
That's really nice. Yeah.
And he's like a very vibrant person. So
he's amazing. He's the coolest little person. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a lot of fun.
So, you know, even when you're hermiting, it's like an intensely social time.
It is. Even with my cat, he's intensely social. He's like a Labrador wrapped up in a lot of fluff. Like, he's a ridiculous cat. He comes if I whistle to him. He plays with Alfie like they're two brothers.
I love them too much.
They wander off into the woods and they like find a frog and they're playing, and it's a beautiful thing to see.
Oh, yeah. So here's something. Apart from the mushroom woman,
yeah.
What is the most like swamp thing that has happened in the swamp?
The most swamp thing?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I have an answer for you. When we were building, like, I was living in London and flying over every weekend on Ryanair with £5 tickets that
yep.
they had back then to try and build this thing, this kind of eco house. And we were digging. We had, like, a digger. We were digging to try and put drainage pipes down, which we really needed a lot of drainage. And we found a tractor, like a skeleton of an old tractor from the 30s or 40s. And according to the locals, this thing had just slowly sunk over the decades. Like, nobody had buried it. It had just sunk. So it was maybe a meter below the soil surface.
So it was,
and
like,
it's not
real bog
it
stuff.
Had been consumed. It had been swallowed by the swamp.
Oh, my God.
That was wild.
Yeah.
So this thing came, and we were like, what is this? Who'd put this here? And they were like, no, I think it just sank over the years.
The bog ate it.
And then they took it away on the back of a trailer, and it's kind of sad to see it go, this old rusty skeleton.
That is very swamp-like.
That's quite swampy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the positive side, can I talk about the positive
yeah.
side?
Yeah, tell me the good shit.
So the good thing is that most people who live in Swedish forests have a huge mosquito problem.
Okay.
Big mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Like, they start off quite small. By the end of summer, they're massive. But we have, because we're so swampy, we have like a Royal Air Force of dragonflies. Yeah.
That eat the mosquitoes.
Yeah, they do. So they're beautiful little things. In May, June, they come out and they're blue and they're very pretty. And then by August, they're like as long as your middle finger, or even longer, as long as a pencil that you've used a little while. And these things fly around. There are thousands of them and they're beautiful, and they eat all the mosquitoes. We have no mosquitoes.
Oh my God, that is the dream, because that would be like a genuine concern as someone who has very delicious blood to biting insects. That's so cool that, like, the ecosystem take care of itself.
It actually makes it a lot more comfortable to live there. Like, when we go to other people's forest houses that aren't so swampy, it's pretty horrible with all the mosquitoes.
And you have, I think, one of my nature highlights of recent times was the elk stealing your flowers.
Yeah, we have elk coming through the garden every maybe 3 or 4 months. and they kind of hang around for about a week. And these guys are massive. They are just so prehistoric and so properly wild. They're wild, more wild than anything I've ever seen in the UK. It's like seeing a bear, you know? And they have zero respect for like hedges or fences, so they just lollop along. They're as tall as a rhinoceros, and they just walk through things. And this guy that you're talking about, he came and he was like eating my grass and eating my flowers, and then he ate all of our artificial flowers. Like I had an urn full of artificial flowers, and he just took it away. He just took it. So we also had one that got wrapped in a hammock. And he was thrashing around. They looked like a great white shark caught in a net.
Is it scary? Like, would you be scared for like Alfie and Monty to be outside when there's an elk around?
Yeah.
Like, are they scary?
They're not scary, but they are slightly unpredictable because they're so wild. So I wouldn't want them out there with an elk.
Because they can't control their behavior.
Yeah, like a general elk is a very docile, lovely, massive thing. But a female elk with young is unpredictable because they're protective. And sometimes you get old dude elks that eat rotten apples and get drunk. Like, this is like a good newspaper article in Sweden. Yeah. You see this a lot. And it'll fall into a tree, or it'll fall asleep on a driveway, or it'll get angry with people walking past. So elk are to be respected, I think. I kind of give them a good distance, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I will respect the elk and ask you my questions to finish up our chat.
Okay.
What book do you wish you had written?
I wish I had written The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
I knew you were going to say that.
Sorry.
That's okay. That's fine. I understand it.
Okay.
What emoji do you most identify with?
What emoji?
Yeah.
Can I do a hybrid?
Yeah.
Okay, I think I'm half pine, half poodle.
Okay, yeah.
Did that work?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's like your city life and your swamp life.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you were going to go to the shop when you're in London, not when you're in the swamp, and buy some crisps, what crisps would you buy?
Crisps. Okay, I love... can I have two?
Yeah.
Really quickly.
Yeah,
I love nice and spicy knickknacks.
Yes, knickknacks are the
best. Because they're not like crisps. They're kind of remolded potato starch covered in flavor.
Yeah, it's mates,
crunchy.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And they're delicious. And they're orange and they're crunchy. And then the other thing I like is posh crisps, like kettle chips kind of thing, but only if they're folded over.
Yeah.
You know, so you get double crunch.
Yeah.
And the best thing ever is when you get a folded one inside a large folded crisp.
Crisp.
So you get a quadruple crisp, like a hermit crab crisp hiding inside a big one. They're the best
it's
ever.
It's like a pearl inside an oyster.
Exactly.
And so you are the last guest of this series.
Wow.
So who would you like to hear me talk to next time?
Thank you so much for having me on.
That's
by the way. I would love, actually, talking of Kit Duvall, I would love to hear her speak on any subject. So I would love to hear her on here.
Cool, that's a good nomination. Well, thank you so much for joining me, for flying out of the swamp and joining me for a chat. This was the last episode in the series of Hello Friend. I will probably come back, I'm not sure when, but in the meantime, listen out for a new fun thing that I'm going to do with a friend. Thank you for joining me. I have really enjoyed your support and all of your tweets. Keep them coming. Keep listening. Go back and listen to episodes that you missed. Let me know if there's stuff you'd like me to do differently next time, or like people that you really want to hear season two. Either way, I will see you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.